It's Thursday the 18th of November. Welcome to episode 69 of Digital Outbox. And hello. Joining me again this week is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello. How's it going?
It's fantastic. I'll paste in those chuckles at the end.
I think we... Yes. Episode 69. Who'd have thought it, eh?
Who'd have thought it? Now, I feel that I should reveal the joke right now, because I wanted to do the picks first, because it's episode 69.
But we're more mature than that.
We're more mature than that.
Yes, we're far more mature. We would never even giggle.
No. We've got a lot to get through.
We have.
First up, don't you wish you worked for Google? Google reward and
yes,
punish.
Yes, I blooming well do. Flipping heck.
So just after we finished last week's podcast, the news came out that they'd given every employee a $1,000 bonus, which doesn't sound much. Google make a lot of money. But they'd also increased everybody's salaries by 10% from the 1st of January.
Across the board, this is everyone.
Yes. Which is a fairly fantastic... email to get in.
I wouldn't mind it. I mean, it turns out that they're kind of saying this is, instead of giving you sort of bigger bonuses, they're going to say, right, grand of that goes into your wage packet now. But yeah, to have the 10% wage rise as well is brilliant.
It is brilliant. But at the same time as the rewarding, they're also punished. So they found who leaked the news and sacked them.
Yeah, so... and. A bit harsh, maybe, because this news would have gotten out anyway.
Exactly.
But I think it was more because it was actually the exact memo that got out. It wasn't just the news that got out.
No, so somebody had taken the actual memo that had been... But the thing is, it's no big surprise. I mean, there's obviously a big market now for engineers and amongst Google, Facebook, Twitter, a lot of the startups.
There's a lot of speculation around, is this Google flinching because Facebook have taken, you know, a number of engineers off their hands? Is this them trying to stop the rot? Because I guess Google, you know, being successful and being at the top of their game, the engineers that work for Google are going to be worth a lot of money in the employment market.
Absolutely. And I mean, at the same time, I think Google is turning into Microsoft. It's turning into the big behemoth.
Yeah, so do you feel a small part in a big machine, or maybe because Facebook is smaller than we think it is.
Yes, and we've got an interesting little story later on about Facebook and just the number of engineers that they're actually using. But the one story that came out the day after, Google offered an engineer $3.5 million not to join Facebook.
$3.5 million.
Million. So this was in restricted stock. So they're basically handing over stock worth that value today. So that could actually, as the longer that guy stays there, obviously that could go up over time.
Well, I think he took the offer, didn't he?
Oh yeah, he's decided to stay.
It's probably he can't sell it for a number of years, but still, $3.5 million in the back pocket. Not bad, eh?
Not bad. I'm sure the Facebook offer was pretty good as well. So
what the hell did he do? Probably not build Wave, that's for sure.
Well, the guy that built Wave joined Facebook.
Did he?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So he is. He quit Google, I think, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And the next day, he blogged that he's now working for Facebook.
I guess as much as anything, Google's thinking, well, it's taking over all our technology. To our rival, really.
I think there's that, but also I think the guy that had built Wave, I think felt a bit aggrieved. I think he felt a bit let down that Google had opened up Wave and, you know, killed it very, very quickly. But I think that's what you get when you launch a product with no
with no particular use case.
Yeah. No reason to exist.
But I think I've said before, I mean, especially in the case of Wave, you never know. There probably are plenty of use cases for it. It just wasn't defined. It was up to people to find uses.
Name one.
No, because I didn't find one.
No, I will not name one. You've also added in that Google may be planning G-Town.
Yeah, so there's talk of them building a whole town based for their employees, basically, to live, socialise and play, I guess. So yeah, they're not only do they have the revenues of a small country, they're they're now building the infrastructure as well.
Oh, to be the mayor of G-Town.
That would be class. It would be a horrible place to live though, wouldn't it?
I wonder if they'll design it using SimCity.
They'll definitely have built a tool for it, won't they?
Oh, they'll be.
And it'll be full of tools as well, I'll tell you.
And each house will be one of the four primary colours. I guess you're going to have to choose which you want. So, moving on from that rather flippant story, on to, I think we both agreed this is the kind of big news in the UK this week.
It's a massive news story in the UK, but I bet it's not on the blooming TV. I bet it's not being harked about anywhere. But it's to do with net neutrality, which we do bleat on about, but mainly because I think it has far-reaching effects that people just don't realise.
Yep, so up until now, the government has actually always said that they're very much for net neutrality. But the new coalition government came in very vague in some of their answers until yesterday. Culture Minister Ed Vasey
Can we call him Tosspot?
You can call him anything you like.
Thank you.
Right-wing Tory scum swings to mind. No, I better not. He's backed a two-speed internet, so letting service providers charge content makers and customers for fast lane access.
I mean, I don't even know what this means. This is going to be awful.
Well, and I guess the couple of big ticket items it can mean is people like Google and BBC likely to face a bill for the amount of content that they actually publish. So if you remember back to
when... Who gets charged for that? BBC gets charged, but who do they pay?
Oh, I don't know how all that. We need Brian on for that. Brian will know.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I mean, effectively, it's going to be us that pay, and we're going to have two lots of internet, which is...
I do remember reading a whole story about Google when it was buying up all that black fiber in the States and how they offset different charges with different things, and it was all... big boy dealing about how all that payment system
but it doesn't
works.
Really matter where the money has to get paid, eventually it'd be coming out of our pockets just to be able to watch, you know, a video channel. I mean, not only that, you probably have to choose your broadband provider based on which particular video site or catch-up site you want to watch.
Well, it could also mean that the BBC says we can't afford iPlayer. You know, when iPlayer first came out, the ISPs all wanted BBC to actually pay a proportion of the bandwidth cost because it was so much to them. Mm. And we all know the Tory government really likes the BBC.
Yes.
So, but also, on another side of the coin, it's websites could pay ISPs to ensure their content gets priority.
Yeah, so some some rubbishy site could pay.
Sky.
Could pay to get priority over everything else, be it YouTube, BBC iPlayer, all the other things that maybe customers really want, but cash-rich people can scupper all that. It's annoying.
And the bit I get annoyed about this is that some people say that we've already got traffic management, but that's very different from net neutrality.
Yeah,
traffic management is all about providing a good overall service. So if you need to throttle back torrents and news groups to make sure that web surfing and gaming and VoIP all works well, then that's fine by me.
And I have much less of an issue that as long as it treats all video channels the same, treats all, you know, file sharing, I have less of an issue. There's still an issue there, and there are people that would argue that even that's wrong.
Oh,
the
purists do argue that that's wrong, but I kind of think there's a bit more real world there, that if somebody's thieving content, I know the purists are saying it doesn't matter what they're doing. It should just be that's provided and you do what you like. But I think there's
I don't think it's just because file sharing is used for thieving. I think there's plenty of good uses, but it's just time-based internet traffic needs to be prioritized. You know, gaming and I guess video delivery and all that needs to come down quickly to offer a good service. Whereas email delivery and website delivery, although website delivery is getting more and more important, it's still not as time critical.
No, and my issue would be that content via the Sky iPlayer equivalent is downloaded at 1 meg per second, but BBC iPlayer, because they're not willing to fund it, is 100k. So hence the quality is worse, hence people won't buy into it, hence people won't use it.
It'll look like ITV's player.
Yeah. So, Excuse you.
Excuse me. Sorry.
But you are suffering. We should have pointed that out right at the start. You are in pain.
Yes, I haven't been well. But anyway, let's move on.
No, I'm not finished. I'm just going to say that what he basically announced yesterday was that some traffic management, where traffic from one source is favoured over another, is likely to be allowed with a ruling due next year.
They're clearly monitoring it or maintaining it, but you can't trust these people to make good decisions.
No,
in the interests of everyday punter.
But I think they're taking the usual kind of right wing approach, which is light legislation and let the market sort itself out. And I think the danger with things like that is that if you give the market too much control, then we'll get stuffed.
Get stuffed. Even during this period of what they, you know, markets settling or whatever, we're the ones that are going to suffer. Never mind.
Speaking of consumer suffering, Virgin today embarked on another campaign, Stop the Broadband Con.
I wonder why they're saying all this now, yeah.
Yeah, and I've just moved to Virgin, so I should state where I am right now. I have just moved. My webs, my speeds at the moment are fantastic. But I thought this was quite interesting, just because it was double standards on Virgin. So they've launched a website, stopthebroadbandcon.org, and they did a big press release, which Richard Branson's urging the industry to back, giving it a big old thumbs up. And what they're basically saying is that web services, well, ADSL, internet services, sorry, are being advertised as 20 or up to 20 or 24 meg, but the average speed is actually 6.5 meg. And that comes from an Ofcom 2010 UK broadband speed report. So it is a stat. It is something that can be quoted. It's not been made up. And basically Virgin's beef is that, and they know that ADSL can't deliver 20, 24 meg. You know, even if you're 100 metres from the exchange, you're not going to get 20 meg. You're going to get a proportion of that. And Virgin are in a pretty strong position. They actually do publish their typical speeds. So and I've put the link in the show notes. And if you look at it, their 20 meg service is actually delivering 18.5 meg, they reckon, for October. So a fairly good speed. And they want ISPs to sign up to this campaign. They want to stop the use of up to. And I thought that was all pretty good.
I know we've talked about it. We've had disagreement about this before, though. I still don't know what's better than up to. I guess up to include and then including your average, likely.
I think going with the average speed and then saying, you know, but it is up to this and you might get some better. The bit I found the double standards was I only signed up to Virgin 2 weeks ago. And if you look on their website, even today, they say up to 10 meg on their own website. Not only the graphic at the top.
The message hasn't got down yet.
Yeah, not only the graphic at the top when you sign up, but it's their first bullet point, up to 10 meg speed.
Now, they would argue that they would say that actually, for nearly all our customers, that's pretty much what they get.
I would argue they've been a cock.
Yeah.
And if they change the wording, fair enough. But don't launch this kind of thing and keep the wording the same.
This campaign has been going on for ages. I still don't think there's necessarily a better term for it. I mean, because saying an average is, I guess it's not accurate for some people, you know, for half the people. Anyway,
what we need is a gadget show on the case.
Because that worked when they did their campaign, didn't it?
And their never-ending campaign, the campaign of nothingness. Anyway, a couple of stories from you. HM government email.
Yeah, so I signed up to that.
This.
Yeah, I did get a little bit worried when I saw HM government in my inbox, and that's literally what it said. It's like, uh-oh, what have I done now? But I hadn't done anything other than I had signed up to the petition put out by TalkTalk's chief saying don't disconnect file sharers. You know, don't. It was, you know, all that time ago when we're trying to stop the rot. Anyway, they have finally managed to get back with a response, and their response is just, again, reiterating why they're doing it. They're doing it because they're saying that UK TV and games industry loses 400 million per annum. Now, that actual figure is a lot lower than the industry was quoting at the time. So at least someone now knows that it's not quite the billion problem that they were talking about. But all they do is reiterate the reasons for their Digital Economy Act. And they don't really give any other... You know, it's only a two-paragraph response, basically. And they're saying we're doing it to save the industry 400 million per year. And they've also said that because technology moves fast, we've put in place, you know, restrictions that allow us to do whatever we like going forward, basically. They say that there isn't, they say that the measures to stop file sharers doesn't include disconnection, but that sounds a bit like contrary to what the actual wording of the act says.
That clearly was all about disconnecting.
Yeah, so they're saying these technical measures would limit or restrict an infringer's access to the internet. They do not include disconnection. So at least that's a step forward. But I don't believe it, basically. But anyway, I thought it was a pretty empty response to, I think there were about 40,000 odd signatures on the petition in the end. But they clearly didn't put any effort into responding.
So not only was the government in touch with you, but Adobe was as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to put, Adobe sent me an email, and I just loved the title. And obviously Adobe have issues with Apple. Ongoing issues, shall we say. So they've released their new Acrobat software, and it's called Acrobat. I guess it's Acrobat 10, but they've called it Acrobat X.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Henry was here, it would be like, it's not X, it's 10.
So, but they've gone from being digits. Acrobat 9 was definitely a digit. This is now a Roman numeral. And it says, why explore new Acrobat X? And it says, it's magic. And I just thought it was a great little dig, an underhanded swipe at Apple marketing.
Moving on to the dark side of the force. Facebook messaging. Facebook have been on a rampage. And almost a Google-esque rampage of announcement after announcement over the last six,
event
8 weeks.
Event after event.
Yes.
But unbelievable.
So they had another event on Monday, which basically was revealed on Sunday to be all about messaging. And it was. Everybody thought it was a Gmail killer, but it wasn't really. So Zuckerberg was up on stage, and he's kind of first quote, this is not an email killer, this is a messaging experience that includes email as one part of it. It's about making communication simpler. This is the way that the future should work. Yep. So in their Facebook world, they've created a seamless messaging conversation history and a social inbox. So they believe this is the gold to make your communication a lot more seamless, not just on Facebook, but across the internet.
Now, so this is a combined system that collates all your emails, all your messages, SMS messages, chat messages,
everything
into one place.
Plus history.
And so, yeah, so you can search your history going back infinitum, I guess. All being entered into the company which I least trust with my data.
No, and it's all on what they've called a single social inbox.
Yes.
Which instantly made me think, what, you're going to share my inbox?
And apparently you can, I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly the details, but it does include friends of friends, and I think friends can send you messages and friends of friends can.
Yes.
Something along those lines.
So it's not so much a Gmail killer, it is more just about trying to unify that messaging experience on Facebook. But you can actually get a Facebook.com address if you so wish.
No.
Exactly. Thanks, but no thanks. But I do wonder how many sites will eventually say you need a Facebook.com.
And probably lots, because, you know, that is the way things are sort of heading. But I've completely lost my train of thought.
well, the only reason I was mentioning about the email address was, if you look at we mentioned that Rockmelt browser last week, which was a social browser built on Chromium. And I actually had signed up and I got a beta invite.
Right.
So I've got it installed, and the first thing you need to do, you must sign in with Facebook.
Yes, they require it.
Yep, that is basically their authentication system, and they're not the only, you know, startup that are looking at Facebook and thinking it's just easier to go with Facebook as my authenticating mechanism.
And that was my train of thought. The reason behind that is because Facebook are just the biggest store of people.
Yes,
that you can get on the internet in one place, and therefore one sign on. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, there's some frightening stats, which is, I think Facebook search is moving on well up the search, you know, the percentage of ownership.
Oh,
purely
definitely.
Because of the number of users that interact with it every day.
And we've talked about...
I mean, it's like the biggest... It's the biggest photo sharing network. It's all, it, all these...
Oh, yeah, by far. I mean, it's got billions of photos on it.
It's frightening how much that site is being used.
And what I was surprised at, I mean, they quote 500 million users. And I've never really said up to now how many are actively using it per day. You know, is it only 5 million? Is it 10 million? But at the event, it's 250 million uniques are actually launching in each day. So that's half its user base.
I mean, that user base is probably out of date now. I imagine it's probably moved on a bit.
Yeah, it's probably almost 600 million. That'll be their next event. They've probably got an event for Monday, which is going to be their 600 million
user.
While
we're on this topic, blooming Apple, Google, and now blooming Facebook, they do an event for every single press release they do nowadays.
Almost.
What's going on?
Almost. But I think that's just the way the world's gone. Well, I blame Apple. Thing is, but BBC... It's how high up the BBC reports this kind of guff now.
Yeah, because when they get to go to an event, they get their journalist out there. They think, well, we've got to put a report back. They put the report back and up it goes on the news ranking. And that's why they release it as an event, because I mean, they get messaging, so much more.
Facebook messaging was a top four story, not tech story, a top four story at BBC News.
Because they're at the expense of a journalist going over to an event which they're being invited to.
I'd mentioned earlier about engineers. Zuckerberg admitted that this was actually their biggest engineering project to do this.
100 engineers working on it? 200?
15.
15 people working on it.
15 engineers.
I mean, which it's a fair-sized number of engineers working together, but it's not what you expect, is it?
No. No. It certainly... It then started to make me think that the amount of money these guys are getting paid maybe justifies itself if that's what they can churn out. If it's these small, dedicated teams that are just churn.
15 engineers. I mean, and say if that's the biggest project they've ever worked on, you know, Facebook's been written by a couple of people, and how much is it worth? No wonder they don't give a poo about our data.
And a couple of little small points as well. This messaging system is going to take a long time to roll out. It's not going to be like everybody gets it tomorrow or everybody gets it by December.
That's because it's flaky, because it's only been built by 15 people.
Exactly. It's rolling out slowly over the next few months. And I guess that's an issue when you're doing some fundamental kind of back-end changes. When you have that size of user base, that is a challenge. That is not easy.
Yeah, because the infrastructure's got to be stretched. But I guess, you know, you can do all that with a small number of people and then ramp it up.
And IMAP support won't be there, but it will be. So a bit like, you know, Gmail, when it first came out, there was no IMAP. And I think after a couple of years, it started to roll out. And one little small tidbit is that you can view Office attachments without leaving Facebook.
So because Facebook have got the integration with Office, haven't they?
Yeah, and, well, Microsoft own a little bit of Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. Bought years and years and years ago. So there's that little integration that you can view an attachment. So I do think it's funny, it's becoming more and more like an AOL closed world. They want everybody in that Facebook.
And they've got everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas AOL haven't.
What a joke. That was my attempt at a segue. It was miserable. The Twitter joke trial. So Paul Chambers.
Your segue was a joke.
Yeah, thanks. So Paul Chambers has lost his appeal against his conviction. I think everybody knows this story. This was... He's a 27-year-old accountant who was at Robin Hood Airport when it got closed, and he tweeted up, crap, Robin Hood Airport is closed, you've got a week and a bit to get your shit together, but otherwise I'm blowing the airport sky high. Nothing too serious. He tweeted it out. Unfortunately, somebody from the airport saw it and thought, that's a terrorist threat. And it went downhill from there.
Yes, and so he got convicted, didn't he? And he went on to appeal.
He appealed. He thought he was hoping the court would dismiss his conviction and a £1,000 fine. However, Judge Jacqueline Davies instead handed down a devastating finding.
Can we call her Tosspot?
You can call her anything you like. After reading out his comment from the site, she found that it contained menace, and Chambers must have known that it might be taken seriously.
But you could read out a million other tweets that happen every day from all over the world.
That are far more serious.
Read out half the jokes that get read on, they get shown on TV. Put them out of, just in a text and shove it in front of a judge.
No, I know. It's
ridiculous.
It's unbelievable. I tweeted last night, I just want to punch Stuart Baggs. Did I get arrested? No, I get congratulated for
I think even a judge would congratulate you on that one.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it was.
Can we call him Tosspot?
Yeah, you can call him a lot more. Unfortunately, he was saddled with a legal bill 3 times higher than its original £384.
We're still not talking big fry. I mean, okay, he's
no,
got...
but hold on, he's having to pay thousands of pounds, and he lost his job, and he can't get a job. He's struggling to get a job because of all this.
Yep,
you know, because that's his name. People know about him. People apply for jobs. People now go and look on LinkedIn and Facebook and do a Google search, and he's there.
Still, it's given the internet something to get a bee in their bonnet about.
It has. So Stephen Fry has offered to pay for the fine. So should he want his finances covered, then good old Stephen Fry is there. But there was also a Twitter campaign. I am Spartacus was the hashtag. And Twitter users angered by this conviction decided to basically tweet the same message that he tweeted a year ago. And I think at the time of that I wrote this, it was about 3,500 people had basically done the same tweet with the hashtag of I am Spartacus.
Now, how ironic, or how, yes, when they get the knock on the door.
Well, as a result of the show's support from the I am Spartacus hashtag was the most popular worldwide subject being referred to on Twitter. And that was when we did the article about 4 or 5 days ago. I think they contacted the police and they said there'd been no reportings of any issues. So hence there'll be no investigations into these 3,500 people. Because, and that's the thing, I mean, at the airport, going to pick one of them. They can't just pick one person. And there was a lot of big names
that did
it as
that.
Well.
They picked one person with this, you know, this guy, and that might backfire on him.
The whole thing is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And I can just only hope that they do. I think that they're reviewing the legal options, and I think they hope to announce tomorrow or Monday what they're going to do next. And I hope they can just appeal again and finally get somebody that's a bit of common sense.
Do you know how crazy this is? How crazy this is that even the Daily Mail think it's madness.
No.
Exactly. That's how crazy it was.
It is.
There's a great quote from Paul, though, wasn't there?
I'll let you do it.
Like, getting support from the Daily Mail is like kissing your sister. Essentially, it's the same, but it just don't feel right.
And that summed up the ridiculousness of this story and the Daily Mail all in one sentence.
Perfect.
It was perfect. That wasn't the only tweet controversy last week. A Tory councillor has been arrested over a tweet he made about stoning a newspaper columnist. Now, I'm going to have trouble pronouncing this newspaper columnist, and I should really have thought this through. This is where I want to phone the BBC and phone the department
Yasmin
that tells them how to...
Yasmin Alibai Brown, I think that's...
We'll go for that. Yasmin Alibai Brown. So, a Conservative City Councillor sent a Twitter message saying that the newspaper columnist, Yasmin Alibai Brown, should be stoned to death. She responded by saying that she would report the councillor, Gareth Compton, and not only to the council, but also to the police. The Conservative Party have suspended the guy indefinitely. And the message, which was now was deleted, actually said, "Can someone please stone Yasmin Alibai Brown to death? ? I shan't tell Amnesty if you don't. It would be a blessing, really." And I guess is that innocent?
I don't know. I don't know who's worse, the councillor for saying.
I mean, it's
it,
a stupid,
you know, again,
comment.
Exactly. So it is another stupid comment.
It's stupid.
But then again, is this columnist who we don't know? She could be a nutter. You know, well, some of the columnists out there are pretty horrible people.
The columnist said, after reading it, that she regarded his comments as incitement to murder. She told The Guardian, "It's really upsetting. My teenage daughter is really upset too. It's really scared us. You just don't do this. I have lots of threats in my life. It's incitement. I'm going to the police. I want them to know there's a law being broken." And she regarded Compton's remarks as racially motivated because he mentioned stoning.
Yeah, see, but that, for honest, me, that doesn't help her case.
No,
because I think, oh, shut up.
It's a complete overreaction.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what
complete
a columnist would do. And that probably sums up what she's like. You know, oh, well, we're too scared to go out. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. So, yes, I don't think anyone comes out shining in this. But again, it's another thing where, you know, how Twitter, you know, be careful what you write out there, guys and gals.
Would it put you off tweeting things?
I don't know, because I don't give not enough people listen to what I'm saying anyway. But
I've got it, but I don't really care either. And maybe we
but
should.
But I would care if, yeah, exactly. Maybe we should. This is the point, isn't it? Do you have to be careful? I don't know. But it wasn't a very wise thing to say, but her reaction is just totally over the top and maybe sums up what she's like.
Right, moving on. Our last Twitter story, and this is just a quickie, because this hacked me off, and I'm not even going to read the headline, but Twitter and
I
Ping.
I think you should sing the headline.
So, yes, Ping was that really great social network launched by Apple with an iTunes.
I was a member for all of about an hour.
Yeah, and they've done an update now, so they've done a partnership with Twitter. If you like a track in iTunes Ping, it will auto-tweet. And if somebody is viewing that tweet on the Twitter website, then you'll actually see and instead of jumping into iTunes, you can listen to the track preview within the Twitter app on the website. But it's horrible because it just auto-tweets everything. And all I saw was instant spam. It was just spam.
Come on, as soon as Ping got announced.
Ring-a-ding-ling.
As soon as it got announced, it was clear it was nothing to do with a social network. It was purely artists to be able to spam people to go and buy their albums and tickets. And I guess now them spamming you buying iTunes stuff.
If you're in any doubt and you want a social network roundabout music, sign up to Last.fm.
Absolutely.
Start scrolling your music. Start seeing what's happening with gigs and other things. Start meeting people on that network.
And Apple, that's because it's your content, not some bloody corporation's content.
Yeah. But thankfully, a lot of the noise has died down. It just seemed to be a first kind of a couple of days worth of noise, and it's now disappeared, which is good.
I wonder whether it's because people have just unsubscribed from Ping.
Don't cross the streams! !! Foursquare. See if I want to know where you are. I'll friend you in Foursquare. I'll fire up my Foursquare app and I'll see where you are, or I'll get some notifications on my iPhone. Don't bloody populate my Twitter stream with it. But I might tell you when our next podcast's out. Anyway, the Google TV, I thought this was quite interesting. A lot of the sites that you could access, or a lot of the websites that had video content that you could access via Google TV. I didn't say Google. I said Google. Google TV.
Like Good Girl.
Yeah. It's been blocked. So Fox is now blocking Google TV, as has Hulu, as has NBC, ABC, and CBS.
And it's just complete. So just to be clear, these are sites where you can happily on your PC, any computer, go and navigate to and watch video from. So you can do that. Now they have made the decision that Google TV, because it is officially delivered via your TV in your lounge, or likely in your lounge, they want to stop it because they see that as infringing on their TV content. But you can tie a computer up to your TV quite happily and navigate to these sites and view it. You just can't do it through the nice, streamlined, easy-to-use box, which is supposed to be, you know, the future. They can't understand, do they?
Nope. And this will probably affect the Boxy Box. And it was actually the same with the Boxy software. When Boxy first came out and it had a Hulu app, after a couple of days of everybody saying, this is fantastic, it got blocked. Even though the same adverts were getting viewed and all the same things were there, blocked.
I mean, I understand if you've got these shows which are your big income, I can understand that people are worried about it. But we do, and maybe people will come back online and we're not giving them enough time to sort of react and reflect on it. And you never know. There's probably deals in the background about advertising and where it can appear and all those kind of things. But it does seem that everything that ever happens, that the initial reaction is stop everything rather than, you know, taking time to look where it's going.
And I think this is one of the reasons.
They have to deal with it one day.
Yeah, but I think this is one of the reasons why, I mean, Apple generally don't come in with a solution that they're happy with until it's doable. And I think that's why Apple TV has always been classed as a hobby. I just think the content deals and persuading these big corporations that's the future is taking a lot longer than people want.
You can't say that about the UK version. They haven't got any deals.
No. But when Google TV reviews are now coming in fairly pessimistic. You know, they've managed to make things worse. It's now more complex, which is a bit of a shame because it has promise for us geeks.
I think it's the future. It's obviously not the future for corporations as they currently stand. It's going to take a while.
No. Speaking of the future, or not, do you like the Beatles?
The Beatles, yeah, that modern band.
Yeah, yeah. They're now on iTunes.
Really?
Why weren't they there already? No. Well, Monday afternoon, Apple.com, and if you fired up iTunes, you got probably the biggest hype of the year. Tomorrow is just another day.
I thought it was a really big... What's going to happen? Wow.
But you'll never forget. Check back here tomorrow for an exciting announcement from iTunes. So, of course, the Apple fanboys went wild. It was like, oh, this is it. This is cloud music. This is whatever. This is everything that we've always wanted. Even somebody said, this is iTunes X. So this is iTunes just as a music player and some other. And in the back of your head, you're like, no, because there's no Steve Keynote. So you just knew it wasn't going to be that big. And sure enough, it was the whole Beatles back catalogue appearing digitally on iTunes.
And I bet it's a really, you know, it's old music, which everyone's got, so I bet it's a bargain price, yeah?
You'd think, you know, there's no physical media, there's no booklets to produce, all that kind of good stuff, there's no shipping costs.
They've sold it about 20 million times over already.
How many times can you buy a Yellow Submarine? Let's be honest. Unfortunately, some cases, some of the CDs are double the price of what the actual physical ones can be bought online.
Well, they're coming at $10.99 or whatever.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Some places are doing them for like $6.99 and $5.99, so...
Yeah, it's just... a lot of guff about nothing.
No, the best bit for me, Ringo Starr, I'm particularly glad to no longer to be asked when the Beatles are coming to iTunes. That was my favourite quote from the whole thing. I just, yes, we're getting loads of money, but it just stops the peasants asking me questions. That just kind of summed up the whole thing for me. And I'm still convinced Steve thinks he's like the fifth Beatle. I'm sure somewhere he's got a mocked up photo of him in the band. They do have exclusive digital rights as well. They extend into 2011. So that is like, what, 6 weeks of potentially exclusivity. I'm sure it's longer, but they won't commit to how long, which makes me think at the end of January it's like free for all.
That'll do, yeah.
But interestingly, Google and Amazon were trying to outbid them as the talk stalled. And I don't know if it was just, is it just one-upmanship? Certainly, if you look at the top, I think it was the top 50 albums, all of the 13 or 15 Beatles albums were in the top 50. So there's obviously a demand for it, but...
Initially, because it hasn't been available before, there is going to be that demand.
I'm going to tread on dangerous ground here. What hacked me off the most was the Apple fanboys getting hacked off that Apple hadn't done a big enough release. And it's like, get a grip.
Yeah.
Just a bit of reality around this. But on the same day, and I'm still convinced they did this as a sweetener, on the same day as Beatles, we've got the official Google Voice app appeared on the App Store.
At last. It's been a while. We've been talking about this for ages.
16 months.
Is that how long it is? So, in fact, it's been
16 months after they first submitted it.
Wow.
It's US only. And I'm still sure it's Apple saying sorry for the Beatles. They've put this in.
Yeah, we know that was a bit rubbish.
Interesting. Google have committed that it's coming to international community next year, so we might get a bit of Google Voice action next year.
I'm definitely interested, you know. I don't know. We'll see. I guess you've just got to go for it. You either go wholesale, don't you, one number from all, or you can't sort of tickle around the edges, really.
No. A couple of more Google stories. Gingerbread. Yeah. So Gingerbread is the next Android release. So it's Android. It's 2.3, isn't it? And Gingerbread will have NFC.
NFC?
NFC.
What the heck's NFC?
Near Field Communication will be in the next Android release.
Sheep communication.
Sorry, what was that?
Sheep communication, near fields.
Bah. bad joke.
We're going to get through this section quick.
Yes.
I'm on a downward spiral.
NFC was the long rumoured to be an Apple next iPhone release next year. NFC is basically a chip in your phone, and if you tap your phone with a chip, you know, either close or if you tap it onto a device, then it'll complete an action.
Like an Oyster card.
Yes. And the expectation is you'll hook up your credit card to your phone, and that whole contactless, you know, Barclay card, Oyster card, do the transaction up to a certain value. It'll do that. Sign in a location. So instead of firing up an app, then you could just be like, you know, walking through a scanner and you're signed in automatically.
I want to create an on-body point of sale device and just walk through crowded Trafalgar Square.
Bye. No, I'll
excuse
go for
me, sir, excuse me.
I would just London Underground, because you could just sit in a chair and let them do the walking. You could just spend the day reading stuff on your iPad and making money.
Excellent stuff.
This was shown at a mobile, I think it was a mobile show that Schmidt. And also I've written Schmidt. I've just realised in the show notes. Schmidt. He pulled out what looked like a new phone and said that the near field communication will be the next release. So I think that was a big surprise to everybody. There's been no press about it with Google at all. It was a lot of the Apple rumor sites were talking about it for the next iPhone. So I think this could be the next thing. You know, your phone being your wallet.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of situations where it would be useful.
And I think in Japan and Korea, I think that's already the case. I don't think that's a shock for that market. But I think for us, it will be.
Yeah, even for things like the Underground, just, you know, not having to bother going to a ticket machine beforehand, you know, pay, get on, pay, get off. Makes a lot of sense in a lot of situations to make things quicker, you know, getting on buses and doing all that kind of stuff.
Might also make the loss of your phone a bit more of an expensive issue.
Yes, you have to keep an eye on it, wouldn't you?
And one little tidbit that came out, Schmidt at the same conference also tried to differentiate Google's Android and Chrome operating systems. And it seems to be, I was waiting for you to sneeze.
I think I might do it. It's gone.
I'm not even going to try and cut that out because that's too hard. The main difference between these operating systems is keyboards, bizarrely. So that's a simplified view, but Google says Chrome OS is the operating system for traditional computers such as PCs, netbooks and laptops, which may include a touch interface as well, but will always have a keyboard. Whereas Android is best suited to mobile devices, which may include keyboards, but will almost always include touch interfaces.
I think it's probably the division we thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, but I think it's just nice to have that absolutely clarified, because it has been vague.
Well, as clarified as you can when you say they will always have keyboards and the other ones might have keyboards, but
I think
they both might have touch, but they both
I mean, I've got to be honest, if they brought out Android for a touch device, I wouldn't, part of me just feels, why don't you just standardize Android across them all? And a lot of people are saying that about iOS as well. You know, is iOS just going to be the operating system of the future? In 5 years' time, will there not be a Mac OS and an iOS? Will it just be I've got an OS and that's it? And also a bit of a delay. The Chrome OS, which did seem to be picking up a lot of press for a launch in November, has now been pegged at a few months for release.
Right, so they're still not ready.
Yeah. One little tidbit for Google Docs. And quite a biggie for me, being an iPad user. But up until now, you couldn't edit Google Docs on any of your iOS devices or Android devices. But that's no longer the case. So an update is rolling out over the coming days. And you can now access Google Docs from your iPad, iPhone, Android with Froyo devices. And edit Docs and spreadsheets on the go.
The movement.
It's excellent. And I tried it just before. I tried it last night and tried it just before we came on tonight, and I've still not got it available. But with that alongside the coming 4.2 release, which brings all the multitasking and all the other goodness to iPad, I think it's going to be a big release.
Yeah.
Big release. A couple of gaming stories before we hit the picks. And I'll do the GT5 one first. It has actually got a release date.
They've come out and they've given another date. This time they're saying they're not moving it. And I think it's gone to Gold Master, hasn't it, and all sorts. So
they actually showed a press disc.
That's okay. Yeah,
and I think that was just to say, everybody, by the way, this is coming. So it's next week, Wednesday, November 24th. And it'll have 1,000 cars, lots of tracks and modes. And I think you've added in 800 standard cars and 200 premium cars.
Yeah, so there's a difference between a standard and a premium car. So the premium cars are the ones that, you know, that you can smash up and you can deform. The standard cars, which obviously make up the most, are the one you just scratch them. But even that's an improvement.
But it sounds like we're running out of time.
You can see why, you know, I guess Sony just said, look, let's just split these down. You haven't got time to make another 800 cars that you can deform in the way that you want. And so they've made that split. And they had to make a stand somewhere, because otherwise this game was never going to come out.
No, and there is, I mean, I took a look. It was a video that came out of all the, because there's like a track editing mode in it, which isn't a track editor as in do what you like. It's more of a pick the complexity, pick the type, and it'll remodel the track based on your preferences. But you can then share that track with others and do all sorts with it. I just think there's too much in it. I just think it's almost too ambitious.
It's too much for a game.
Yeah, and I've got to be honest. I'm kind of, after all the hype, it's like, yeah, I'll get it for Christmas, but I don't need it next week.
It'll sit there and it'll do me whenever, you know.
Yeah, I've not any big real, I must play it now.
It's almost like it's too daunting as well, because there is a big, I mean, even Forza suffered from this. There's a big collector part of me that I like, you know, to unlock the cars and to get them in a garage or whatever. But when there's 1,000 to get, it's, you pretty much know you're never going to do that. You're never going to experience this game in its entirety, because there's just too much to even be bothered to do. So it's a bit pointless in some respects.
Yes.
However, it does look gorgeous. It looks amazing.
Yeah, but I think the GT games have always looked amazing.
They've been the standout games on all the platforms, and you can see why they wanted to spend time on this. But
well, graphically, I still think playability they're a letdown.
Yeah, I mean the demo, it felt okay, but the controller was just its killer.
Naff. Anyway, final story, and this is just had to put this in. Call of Duty Black Ops. We mentioned it last week. It was my lame pick,
but a good pick.
It generated, well, it's actually very good. I've actually played it some more, and I am very much enjoying multiplayer, which I never thought I would say, but I'm actually really, really good. On its first day, it generated $360 million in revenue, which is like the record on a gaming platform, but also compared to Avatar took in $232 million in revenue in its opening weekend. This did this in one day.
And don't forget, this is an industry that's obviously just meant for kids, according to the government.
And UK alone, $58 million day one sales. That's 1.4 million units. And that just shows you the scale. It's massive. I mean, there's not you weren't getting 1.4 million units going out to see Avatar on day one.
Units, is that what you...
I did say units. I'm feeling slightly sluggish tonight.
Or eunuchs either.
Yeah. You didn't get 1.4 million people.
No, absolutely. They definitely didn't have process that many. But it's a massive industry nowadays.
It's not just
amazing.
A one-day blip either. By day five, they'd done $650 million in revenue.
People like me still haven't bought it, and I'm still on the list. You know, Christmas time probably for me.
Yeah, well, the first patch is out today, which fixes a number of bugs and issues, which is all good.
Yep.
And that's our news stories for the week. We'll now move on to our picks. And as Chris's is fantastically good, I'll do mine first. Mine is an app, and it's been out for iOS devices for quite a while. It's called Boxcar, and it's a notification app. So the way the older version worked, you signed up, you could sign up your Twitter account, Facebook account, and if somebody pushed you a message, you got a notification on your iPhone or your iPad. So that was it, pretty simple. And there was other devices, there was other mechanisms of doing it. You could sign up for Twitter for like SMS notifications and stuff like that. But before SMS notifications were out, it was the only really quick way of getting something to you and somebody, you know, sent you a direct message or whatever. And it was free. So quite a nice app, but you couldn't do too much more. But there's a brand new version out of version 4, and they've added in a lot more networks, so you can get a buzz. if somebody does something Google Buzz, then you're getting a notification. Same with Twitter. You can add in any RSS feed. So if there's a website you're particularly watching and you're waiting for a post, you'll get a notification that something's been done. And also hooks up with Growl. So Growl's a notification system on the Mac. So you can actually tie up system events on your Mac, sending out a notification to your iOS device. Now, the thing that I've used...
Notifications of notifications.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, if there's a particular task that's finished, you're just wanting to know when it's done.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, so things like that. The thing that I've used it for today is you can actually put in somebody's... You can put in, like, a Twitter account and say, notify me when somebody tweets. And that might sound a bit odd, but there's a couple of things that's quite handy for. Amazon have now got a Twitter account. Amazon UK is the actual handle. And next week, Amazon are doing Black Friday events in UK.
They're doing it in the UK as well, eh? So yes. Black Friday is it's an American invention, isn't it? But you get loads of good deals.
So it's after Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's the last Thursday in November, and then you have Black Friday, which is their big sale. I guess we have it with the Boxing Day sales.
And New Year and Boxing Day, yeah.
Yeah, so the Black Friday is their equivalent. Apple, over the last couple of years, have done the same in the UK. They've had kind of smaller events, but they've still had a kind of event round about Black Friday. And Amazon, at the start of this week, says, yeah, we're going to do the same in the UK. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we'll let you know the details. And over the week, they've been quoting things like 60% off Xbox 360s, 60% off Wii's, 50% off Sony TVs. And I'm sure what we're going to see is there's 100 Xbox 360s at 60% off. Go get them. That kind of thing. I'm sure it's going to be that, or it'll be a lower spec one. There'll be some conditions on it, but...
Having
this means when they tweet up to say that's now available, I'll get a notification straight away. Also did it today with a site called Mondo Tees, which is an American site which is doing some fantastic Star Wars posters. But there's only runs of 200 or 300 and they don't reprint. And generally when the guy tweets up that it's now available, 5 minutes later he'll tweet up saying sold out. So chances of getting in there are very, very difficult.
But now you have a better chance.
Well, I succeeded tonight. I have my Star Wars poster. It was a bit unfortunate because my notification actually failed for some reason. And seemingly it can fail with Boxcar. And what they say is once you set up a new one, switch off your iPhone and switch it back on again. And that just re-registers with the iPhone, with the Apple's notification servers, which sounds a bit hooky.
Yes.
But Shaquille signed up and had initial problems today. And then he did that and it worked from then on. And he texted me to say, I can't get on the website because it's looking for cookies which don't work in the iPad, and he was in the car at the time. So I ran to my Mac, jumped on, got my poster, and then he phoned me and said, I'm still struggling if I give you all my details. So I was like, yeah. So I fired up Chrome because it said it was one order per person. He was telling me all his details, put them all in, hit the buy button, and it was sold out. So I feel a bit guilty.
you took his poster, man.
No, mine was bought before then. I'm not going to start. I'm kind of tempted to, like, if it comes through, I might just give him it. So I do feel a bit guilty. So we'll see what happens. But that's my pick. If you're looking for some notifications, because there's a new update for the official Twitter app this week, which gave notifications as well, but I don't think they respect sleep times, whereas on Boxcar you can say, don't buzz me through the night, please. I'm sleeping. So quite a nice app and it's free. Your pick, Christopher.
So yes, from going from 3 weeks where I don't think I've actually had a pick, I could have chosen three picks this week because I've got my new webcam, my Logitech C910, which is very good, but I will probably save that for next week. There was SugarSync, which you highlighted during the week, which is actually nice bit of kit. Again, maybe we'll save that for a future because I think it's worthwhile, but it's got to be this week for me, my new Kinect. Yes, I have a Kinect.
Dan's baby.
I weekend like Ian at an Apple store, and I went out and bought it actually from a physical shop. I didn't even buy it online.
Wow.
Yes.
But that's just the instant gratification.
That and sadly that's what I wanted it straight away, and I thought, sod it, let's go and do it. So I did, and I am very happy that I did, because as much as the jibing I've received for having a Kinect, I've had a lot of fun with it. It's good.
Well, to be honest, no, hold on. The jibing that I gave you was because you were dancing to Lady Gaga on your own in a room.
And laughing as well.
I have actually put up in the blog post because Tam picked one up.
did he?
And Tarman was commenting last week's show saying that he's picked up a Kinect. And I said you had as well, and you're going to post a video. So I'm looking forward to that video.
I'm not posting a video. Fat blob dancing to Lady Gaga is never a pretty sight.
All over it.
I think you said the next Star Wars kid. I mean, basically, for all the stories that are out there and for everything that's gone around about Kinect and how, you know, what it's going to be like and what it is like, it's an amazing bit of technology. It's very, very impressive. It does exactly as you expect it to do, basically. You know, it recognizes you, it recognizes all your movements, and it tracks you, and it can track you and another player as well. It tracks behind you a little bit in, you know, it's not one-to-one, but then none of the games out there that particularly need one-to-one precision, you know, you work with them. As an experience, it turns an Xbox into something different. And I think that's almost, you know, that's almost the selling point for it, really, is that it's like having a new console without having a new console. And okay, the style of game isn't going to be for everyone. I appreciate it's not going to be for, you know, your hardcore gamer yet. But I do stand by the fact that it is a lot of fun. You do need an awful lot of room, though. And that is something, I know it's been said everywhere online, but you do need an awful lot of room. The kind of play area starts about, for full functionality, it starts about 6 foot away from your sensor. So that's already quite a lot of room. And then the size of, you know, you need a 6 foot square box to actually to use it fully in. So that's big for most people's, you know, lounges. However, if you've got the space, it's wicked. It just works. And that's what's so impressive about it. There's no fuss, really. It just does what you think. And it's pretty sensitive as well. Things like the bowling game on Wii Sports, actually, you know, you can affect the... You can affect where the ball goes and the spin that goes on it and the direction and all those kind of things. Just it does feel like you're holding an invisible bowling ball. It's amazing.
One of the questions I was asking through the week was about lag, because I think that was a lot of people's worry at the start, was that you do a movement and it could be, you know, a couple of seconds by the time it interprets what you've done and then applies it onto the game. What have you found?
So, yeah, it does, like I say, it tracks behind you a little bit. It's not a perfect one-on-one, because it depends on how complicated your movement is, to be honest. And some games sort of seem to deal with it a little bit better than others. But essentially, imagine if you're a bit drunk. That kind of, you move your hand and then you can see almost Hello. Like it's trailing behind. It's probably between a tenth and a quarter of a second maybe behind. But like I say, for the actual games and the style of games and the way they implement it, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. It feels like you are moving that character straight away. And I have no doubt that people will learn how to deal with the interface just like they learn how to deal with, you know, the Wii controller and all those kind of things. You can't cheat it, though. It's you know, like the Wii controller, you could sit down and if you wanted to play bowling, you could just, you know, flick the wrist in the right way. You can't. This requires full-on physical movement. If something's coming in front of you and it's 2 foot wide, you have to move 2 foot to get out its way. You know, if you've got to duck under something, you can't just duck your head. You've physically got to get crouched down on the floor. And it can be a knackering experience. It really can. Genuinely tiring experience. You couldn't play all night, for example.
Yeah.
Full-on in some of those games. But I guess the other thing is that I'm not alone in this. They've already sold 1 million units.
Yeah, I mean,
already sold 1 million things.
It's a hit. When you consider the price as well, I think a lot of people, I certainly poo-pooed it a bit by saying I think the price is too dear. I think they had to hit the, you know, £70-80 mark to make it attractive, but obviously not. And the predictions are 5 million by Christmas. They reckon it's going to be a massive hit.
It is a bit like a console. People have to buy the games to go with it. It's not like you're just buying an accessory for existing games.
Yep.
So a sale of a Kinect also means, like, for example, for me, you know, a purchase of another two games.
Yeah.
Plus the one in the box. So it's you know, immediately you've doubled your money, really, because it's, you know, cost of three games is that, you know, X number. But yeah, it's it's blooming big. That's one thing that I don't think comes across. Imagine like a 30 centimeter ruler. That's kind of the front of it. But it's a pretty big bit of kit. Anyway, I really enjoy it. And good. I don't think we've seen the killer game. I think we'll see that next year. And I think even, you know, if they're the clever developers out there, actually might make it even enticing for someone like yourself.
I've no doubt. I think as well, the fact that they are going to sell so many will entice a lot of developers then to develop for it, because it's just...
Well, at the moment, if you could shove out any old PAP, and I'm sure someone will buy it, because it's...
Well, I mean, Tam's already said that from his brief play, he knows he's going to sell his Wii, because it's going to replace the Wii for those kind of, you know, Wii-type games. And then I think you're going to see the killer games coming along that are going to probably, you know, well, maybe entice me next year to go, you know what, 100 quid, I'm there. I just
because it'll come down in
now.
Price as well. That's the other thing that happened. Yep. As soon as they know that they can sell it, they'll reduce that price.
Two other little points, not wanting to take over your pick. One was a tweet, which I thought was excellent, and all it said was, if this had been done by Apple, it would have been raved about by fanboys around the world as what a groundbreaking piece of technology. And it's maybe not getting the recognition it deserves because it's from Microsoft. And the second one was the amount of people trying to hack it already.
Yeah, so I love this.
So they're generating PC drivers, Mac drivers, you know, all sorts of different drivers.
There's already people there that are manipulating photos using their hands.
Well, I don't know if you see, did you see the video the guy had?
I haven't.
So there's a video and he's captured, and it's just showing you how the Kinect's capturing depth. So at first you look at it and it just looks like him sitting at his computer and he's got his desk and he's got like a black outline around him. But then as he moves his mouse, he's changing what the view he's got, and you can see it's actually a 3D position he's got, and he's rotating the video in real time. And you can see he's not capturing, obviously, behind, because the Kinect's only looking, you know, at the front. So he turned around the back of his mug, and it just was an empty shape.
So
but
it just, yeah,
it was amazing. And I just know how much some of this tech costs to go and actually do for real, you know, and do all the kind of, you know, do all the visualizing of real environments and then capture it and turn it into 3D models. And you just look at this, this is 100 quid. And people are doing some really, really amazing stuff already.
And I can't wait to see what people come up with, because there are some clever people out there. And I hope, in one way, I hope Microsoft embraces it as well and says, go for it. I mean, I think we're going to see more from this. I don't think it's going to end just at a few silly little games.
Excellent. Good pick. And that's our show for the week. If you want to find out more about us, we are on digitaloutbox.com. Please email us, info@digitaloutbox.com. We're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. And go on, fire up iTunes. I know everybody hates it, but give us a review. And we'd really appreciate it. Chris will post it. See if we get another 5 reviews. Chris will post a video of him dancing on Kinect. And you know who you are, people that haven't voted. It's just 5. I'll go count them. And what
I'm going red just thinking about it.
I've got excited just thinking about it. Five votes, people.
It's
5.
Really not a pretty sight. It's genuinely not pretty.
The best bit, I could email people right now and get 5. So 5, go on, 5 votes and Chris will do it. You know he will. If you want to find out more about me, I'm on Twitter as Shweepa and my blog is END.net. Chris, where are you?
I'm on Twitter as Star Wars Kid 2.
Revenge of the Star Wars Kid.
Twitter as Cheesy UK.
Thanks for listening and join us again next week. Goodbye.
See you next week. Bye. You get? Where'd that come from? Planning that?
No, it was just as you leaned back in your chair and you thought, yeah, show Dan, he's going to beg for votes. And I was like, yeah, dance, fat boy, dance.